This is a podcast from the University of Manchester's Jodrell Bank Centre for Astrophysics. For more information, see jodcast.net.
Hi, I'm here today with Professor Chris Collins from the Liverpool John Moores University. Hi, Dr. Collins.
Hello.
We just heard a very interesting talk from you about testing models of galaxy formation using massive galaxies.
Mm-hmm.
Very interesting. Can you first maybe tell me how do you do those models of galaxy formations? What are they from?
They're really based on what we know about the way structure in the universe forms. So we know that the universe is composed of planets and stars and galaxies. But when we look at more distant objects, we find that they're less massive and that the distribution of matter is more uniform. If we go back far enough, then we have the cosmic background radiation, which tells us that structure must have grew from very tiny low amplitude density perturbations that grew as a result of gravitational attraction, and to form the objects that we see today in the universe. So the more sophisticated models trace the distribution of matter through cosmic timescales, and they illustrate how the force of gravity can change these small fluctuations into much bigger ones in terms of galaxies and so on. And it's from that prescription that we get the predictions that we use to that are confronted by the observations.
Okay, so is there different types of models?
They're based usually. There's really one type of model that seems to work best these days, which is basically what's called it's essentially a computer model, in fact. In which you essentially just populate a model universe with mass points, and you introduce a spectrum of fluctuations, tiny ripples, if you like, in their distribution, and you basically just allow that to evolve, and pretty much many of the features that we predict should be taking place actually are mirrored in the simulations. There are more sophisticated versions of those which introduce gas dynamics, so to try and understand how in general, these simulations are just simulating essentially the dark matter in the universe. We know that the biggest mass component, the biggest component of matter in the universe is dark. That means we can't see it. It's in some unknown form. And these simulations are good at developing, at predicting how that matter should evolve. The more sophisticated versions introduce more complex physics in order to try and understand how what we call the baryonic material, which is the matter that we're more used to. It's the tables and chairs and so on that's the stuff of everyday life. That has more complicated physics involved in it on these scales, and the hydrodynamic models that are used try and mimic that.
And so you were saying that you're looking at clusters of galaxies to kind of test those models. Why clusters?
Well, clusters are what we call they're the largest gravitationally bound objects. So we're bound to the Earth. If you jump up, you come back down. We're bound to it. And the Earth is bound to the Sun, the solar system, and so on. The Sun is bound to the galaxy, and if you go up in scale, the largest objects that are gravitationally bound are clusters. And that gives them a unique position, because we know that that clusters of galaxies should evolve relatively quickly because they're the largest gravitationally bound objects. So as we go back in time, we should see fewer of them. And we know from the simulations I mentioned earlier, we know how quickly they should evolve. And so we have quite an accurate prediction for how many they should be and what their properties should be. So we're able to confront those models with observations because we can see these objects out to quite large cosmological distances, distances going back to 80 or 90% of the age of the universe. So they become really very important laboratories for understanding the properties of galaxies.
How easy are they to observe? Is it just you take optical data and you look at it and just like, ooh, big cluster here?
Or? You can do that. You can do that. And that's a very good way of picking out local clusters, just looking at the galaxies in them from starting 20 or 30 years ago with photographic emulsion, just Kodak photographic emulsion plates that were taken where you could easily find the local clusters. But as you go out further in distance, you of course are only seeing the clusters in projection. You don't see them in three dimensions. The photographs and latterly the CCD images of these clusters are only in two dimensions, and so the contrast between the cluster, and which may contain thousands of galaxies, and the background distribution of galaxies becomes less and less. So when you get out to cosmological distances, you need to find other techniques. So, for example, we know that the clusters of galaxies have very large gravitational potential wells, and that's full of hot gas which emits X-rays. It's very easy, relatively easy, to pick up those that emission, that signature of X-ray emission from a cluster potential using X-ray satellites. So that's a more modern method of selecting them.
Okay, so you've been looking at actual data and comparing them to models. Do you find that the models represent well the evolution of cluster, or do you find differences?
Well, it's always good in science when it's good when the data agree with the model, because it means you're on the right path and it means that you're progressing. But it's probably more exciting when the data disagrees with the model, because it's then that you have to think harder, and it's then that you have to come up with new ideas. And it's the ideas that really drive science in general, but particularly drive cosmology. And actually, yes, we are in a position at the moment where we don't have good agreement between the observations and the theoretical predictions.
Well, that's an exciting time.
It's an exciting time, that's right.
What kind of discrepancies, or is there any peculiar objects or anything particular that's interesting?
Yeah, I mean, what we tend to find is, what we've been looking at is the largest galaxies within these clusters. So as I mentioned before, these clusters contain thousands of galaxies. If we just look at the biggest galaxies, then what we find is that they actually don't change very much in with time. They remain essentially the same mass, so they essentially weigh the same over cosmological epochs, and they roughly are the same size. So if you want an analogy, it's a bit like your 7 or 8 year old child being as tall as their parents at that age and having exactly the same characteristics. One wonders why they've grown so well so quickly. And it's that kind of problem that we have. The theoretical model predicts that they should grow much quicker over time than they seem to.
Oh. And what would be an explanation for that?
Well, that's a good question. It's not clear. It may well be that we don't have a good understanding of how objects grow in the very early universe. It could well be that objects, rather than accumulate material in the way I've been describing, which does take a long period of time, they actually grow very quickly. And they collapse directly from giant gas clouds. That would quicken the accumulation of mass in the early universe, and that would make them bigger and more massive much earlier. So if that was the case, the theory would agree more with the observations.
But wouldn't that cause problems for smaller galaxies then?
Not necessarily. You could form the smaller galaxies much later without too much problem. We know roughly, it's sort of a rule of thumb, that the smaller the galaxy is, the later it forms, or the more recent its stellar population is. So it's really, the problem really is for the big, for forming early enough, the very biggest galaxies, because they, there's a lot of mass associated that has to collapse to form the galaxy, and it has to be done in a quick time. Keep watch read the general scientific literature, because I think this is an area that's not well understood, and there'll be new results coming shortly. There's a number of new missions, that space missions in particular, that will extend the range of the observations quite significantly. So watch out for those results.
Can you maybe tell us a bit more about those new missions?
Yeah, sure. I mean, at the moment, the Planck satellite, for example, is in orbit, and it's designed to measure the fluctuations in the cosmic background radiation that I mentioned to high precision. But as a byproduct of that, it will also find lots of very distant clusters of galaxies, if they're there. And from those observations, it should be very easy to work out just how massive they are, and compare those to what we expect from simulations. And this is something that many astronomers in this area are waiting to see.
Okay, well, thank you very much, Professor Collins.
Thank you.